Right, hello everybody, and welcome to part two of the Tour de Rescue Big Debrief. What went well, what didn't, and what would I do differently next time, if there is a next time. So we got up to about the end of day two. Forgive the noise in the background, there's a beautiful fox red Labrador eating a stag, and I don't have the heart to put her in another room, because she's been a little darling. So yeah, we are just about to finish day two. So quick kind of recap for you, really. I think, because one thing I didn't talk about in the previous call, I gave you a rundown of how kind of busy day two was, but I didn't give you a bit of an overview of the rescues that we visited. And I mean, all of them were amazing. Day one, day two, day three, and day four were amazing. Day two really gave me an idea of the different kinds of people who were running different kinds of rescues, all with big hearts, all, you know, with a love of dogs that far exceeded any other priorities in their life, but all with different kinds of resources as well. And this was continued into day three. So we started off at Cliff's Place, a Hope Animal Shelter, and there was this guy. I think this place must have previously belonged to his mum and dad, to his parents, and he had kind of inherited it, or maybe one of his parents was alive and he was looking after them as well. But it was a sanctuary. He had everything in this rescue, from pigs, sheep, goats, donkeys, horses, dogs, so many cats, so many kittens, chickens, a raccoon, an emu, a couple of wallabies. It was like, honestly, it was unbelievable. And the problem was that, and this is an interesting little learning point that I got from it. So this guy obviously has such a huge heart, and he basically couldn't say no. You know, the guy's problem, if you had one, that was that his heart was too big, and he couldn't say no to any kind of helping any kind of animal. So he had, you know, he would get a phone call to say, from somebody to say, a friend of mine, or not even a friend of mine, I would get a phone call to say, you know, I can't look after this dog, he's not very well, and he's going to get put down. And then he would even go and collect it. You know, this guy would go and collect the dog, or collect the kittens, or collect whatever it is. He had some sheds out the back that he was trying to refurbish quickly, because he knew he would be getting some ponies in and horses towards the winter, because he always does. And so he operated like that, and therefore he literally could not build storage. He literally couldn't build facilities fast enough to fill up the, before they were getting filled up with cats and dogs. A lot of cats, so many cats and kittens. And it was like a constant battle. I really don't know. You'll find out more about him in a couple of weeks when we do his video. But I guess his will probably go out on the 11th, 12th, 13th. Maybe it's about the 20th of October. I guess his video will probably go out. And on the Tour de Rescue page. So make sure you check it out, and make sure you share it as well, because there's some fantastic stories that we're telling in there. And yeah, if you know, be a part of it by sharing it, please. And you learn something as well, for sure. So there was the likes of him who operated like that. Then we had the guy who I mentioned before, Steve Wiley, who runs Shack Sanctuary, who he didn't want anybody to know where he was. He didn't advertise the location, because he didn't want people just dumping dogs at the end of the road, you know, because he knew that's what would happen. And I think he maybe's had a better, don't get me wrong, he was still working too many hours a day and all this kind of thing, but I think he had a better kind of system, in the sense that he just did dogs, he just dealt with the kind of death row dogs, if you like, who didn't have anywhere else to go, you know, who were literally going to be put to sleep. And what they got at Steve's, which is what all the animals get everywhere, is like another chance, you know. He gave them a chance, and he didn't put any pressure on them time-wise to get fixed and get rehomed. You know, they had as much time as they needed, really, to find their feet, build up a relationship with him, and then, you know, get passed on. Obviously, the intention is always to that the dog will be rehomed, but some of the dogs couldn't be rehomed, and some of the dogs, it was obviously going to take a long time for them to get rehomed. So yeah, there was a, I think that was the sort of disparate range of help that are available in the rescues. Then we went to Save Our Strays, who were a local rescue who were doing some fantastic stuff. They'd been around for quite a long time. We went to Maxie's Mates. They'd just recently taken over quite a big property, actually, with some like enrichment rooms, and yeah, they had an outdoor space, lots of helpers, lots of volunteers there. They obviously had quite a good, really good slick fundraising operation going on. Then we did two breed specific rescues. One was Heart Welfare, who specifically deal with huskies, and the other was the Edward Foundation, who deal with just bulldogs. And I believe both of those rescues were foster-based rescues, so they didn't have kennels, they didn't believe in kennels. They would work with other rescues to get their kind, the breed that they were passionate about out of kennels, and it was all about foster families. This foster families thing was a big thing which came up time and time again, and I think going forward, there's definitely some stuff, which I'll talk about this at the end, about what I want the sort of legacy and the long-term plan to be from this event. There's definitely more stuff we can do to get more foster families involved with, get more people involved with being fosterers, you know, because these rescues are crying out for fosterers all the time. They have something, which I'd never heard of this, they had something known as, they had a lot of failed fosterers, you know, and when you hear the word failed fosterers, you automatically think like, oh dear me, you know, someone he didn't like it or whatever. But no, it was the complete opposite. It was that they fell in love with the dog so much that they were fostering that they ended up keeping him. So, and a lot of these rescues had failed foster families, you know, who then went on to often do work within that breed specific charity. So yeah, fostering is definitely something which will, yeah, needs to be made more of a thing. They need to think of a way to market fostering as, in the same way that kind of Borrow My Doggy have done, in a way, I suppose, you know. Make it like, you know, do you want to have a dog for a while? Do you want to help rehabilitate a dog? And yeah, just selling the benefits of it, really. So that was that. They were the rescues that we visited on the Tuesday. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, 3 rescues and 2 breed specific rescues. And then we did the seminars on the evening. And this, as I said yesterday, this was kind of a real feel good moment when we had everybody kind of pulled together from my community, you know. And this is something that I've kind of talked about in this month's ledger as well. Is that I like doing big projects, you know. I've got a project coming up now, running in the lead up to Christmas, which is going to build up to be quite a big project, and I am starting to, well, not even starting to, but I am collaborating with people who are in my world, who share my values, who share my work ethic, who share my desire to want to get on, you know, and desire to get on and do good and have fun at the same time. And that's why I collaborate with people when I do seminars and stuff all around the UK. More events that we do, we'll do more collaborative events in the future as well. Like I said, this project that I'm working on leading up to Christmas is going to be not totally, but it's going to be partly collaborative with people, again, who are in my world, who are investing in their business, who are more invested in me, I guess, you know. I'm interested in helping everybody who's in the inner circle, or anybody who's ever been to an event before, but obviously the people who are more invested in their own success, by virtue of that they're more invested in my services, well, they're the people who are going to get more help from me, you know. They're going to get more help from me, they're going to get more opportunities from me. And yeah, I think that the Tour de Rescue was a good example of a lot of the stuff that I want to do in the future, where I'm going to bring together more people who are like me, invested in my world, keen to get on. And I'm going to provide more opportunities for people to push themselves out of their comfort zone and move on and get on, you know, and develop their speaking skills, develop their writing skills, develop their training skills, develop their online teaching skills, all this kind of thing as well. I'm trying to position myself as someone who is worth hanging around, basically. And the Tour de Rescue was a great example of that. Yeah, we managed to pull together loads of people from my world, if you like. We had speakers who were PBIC members, mostly PBIC members. Even those that weren't, I'd known them for a long time. The likes of Dave Davies, who you've heard me speak about many times before. Rachel Bean, I've known her for many, many years. Rachel's coming to Impact as well next year. And I've had Rachel up here many times doing first aid courses and stuff. And she's appeared on podcasts and all that kind of thing. And various other people as well who were involved. But the majority of people who were involved were people who were in my world. And yeah, I think this is to sort of digress a little bit. I was going to talk about this later on, but another thing I was really pleased about was how I managed to pull together people from all areas of my universe, if you like, you know. So Ben Waters from SS1 Creative, he donated the Tour de Rescue website. Well, he wouldn't have donated the Tour de Rescue website, or he wouldn't have donated a website, and I hope you should check it out with tourderescue.com as well, because it's brilliant. He wouldn't have donated that if he didn't think I was somebody worth investing in, if I wasn't already obviously invested in his business as well. Julia Brown, my book illustrator, she donated the Tour de Rescue logo, which I'm sure you'll agree is absolutely fantastic, you know. Again, Julia wouldn't have done that if I wasn't somebody who she wanted to be associated with, you know. So there is a value in investing in things, in investing in yourself, and investing in other people too, investing in their services. You know, you shouldn't be doing this just to get freebies. You know, it's certainly not why I did it, but it's to do with lots of different things as well. That I do in my business with regards to positioning, how I position myself. And, you know, we got Vicky Fraser along to come and do a talk. Vicky comes to a lot of my events anyway. Dave Davies came along and talked as well, obviously, you know. So there's lots of people from, even if you think about, move on to day three in a minute, but Ricky D. Ricky Durkin, to give me his full name, was a guy who I did Panto with, 20 years ago, and in Sunderland, we did two, I think, yeah, we did two Pantos, and became really good friends, and he was a local DJ at the time, and anyway, he ended up moving away, but I contacted him again when we did the Poodle to Pitbull Pet Business podcast, and he's the guy who provides the voiceover for the Poodle to Pitbull Pet Business podcast, and Ricky is... So naturally, when I knew I was going to be in the Peak District, and I knew he was on Peak FM, he was a natural contact for me to reach out to and say, "Hey, I'm doing this thing. Any chance you can get me on the radio?" You know, and so it proved to be, and it happened, and it was excellent. And then we went off and we did another piece in a bit, which I'll talk about in a minute. But there, And in a way, that's a good example of follow-up as well, because I have previously contacted Ricky about getting on Peak FM for, I think it might have been earlier this year. Yeah, very early this year when I was organising the little seminar tour that I did. And one of the seminars was in Buxton, and I contacted Ricky then, but for one reason or another, it didn't come through. But yeah, this time it did, and you know, it just all just helps. So you will do well, and this is something that I teach my Diamond and especially my Platinum members, and it's something I'll be going into great detail with at next year's Impact event as well, is positioning yourself as somebody who people want to be associated with, who people want to work with, who people enjoy working with, you know? And there are certain things that you have to do to make that happen. It doesn't happen overnight. It's not a case of simply just asking, because not everybody wants to work with you, you know, just because you've asked them. Or certainly the people who do work with you just because you've asked them to won't be necessarily the people who you want to be associated with long term. So there's lots of thoughts that have to go into this, but this is certainly how I approach my business. One of the ways that I approach my business, you know, many different levels that I look at it. So anyway, getting back to the, so that was something that I've cultivated over the years. And but you're only kind of able to do that if you make yourself, it's easier if you make yourself a person of influence, which is who I'm building myself up to be, if I'm not already. So that was day two anyway, that was a recap of day two. We woke up bright and breezy, went to see Ricky D, whose radio station was just around the corner. Me and my dad went in there to do that. That was fun. And then we drove off an hour down the road to Crowfoot Kennels, met Sophie at Crowfoot and little Eva, who you probably saw in the video, the poor little white bulldog staffy cross type thing that that they had in there, who had two, Sophie thought she was going to need two new hips, just, you know, dumped because she wasn't a perfect dog. And Radio Derby came along and recorded an interview there, so that was brilliant because that gave some more exposure to Crowfoot Kennels as well. And then we hopped on the bike and rode up the road to Just for Dogs. And this was a really interesting rescue, because these guys had been running for a little while, but they'd obviously been given some kind of listen to that noise, Ruby, shut up. They'd obviously been given some kind of endowment, you know, some kind of charity, big charity donation. I mean, like a big one, because they had invested in the property and all of the kennels and stuff. They all had glass doors and things like that, and yeah, they were just able to do so much. But it was like a really slick operation. So they had organized a coffee morning that morning, which had raised like a couple of hundred quid before we even got there. They had a big field out the back which they used for dogs, and they had another field that they used for like car boot sale-y type things, again similar to what Bryson's were doing. And they also had like a shop area where people could come, almost like a second-hand charity shop, but it was on site. So people could come and buy stuff and donate stuff. And yeah, the business lesson you can take away from the kind of really successful, in inverted commas, successful rescues, is that they had, you know, they had multiple things going on all of the time. Yeah, they had small events, big events. They had members of the community involved baking cakes or getting sponsored by this or sponsored by that or sponsored by their local Sainsbury's or something. You know, they had multiple things going on. And you, in your business, you need to have multiple ways of bringing in new clients. You need to have multiple things to sell them once they've come into your business. And if you pay attention to what's going on in the PBIC, and you go through the induction and you listen to what's in the PBIC teleclass vault, and you book your calls with me and you ask questions and you do what I tell you to do, then you'll quickly go from somebody who doesn't have a proper way to bring in new clients or have very many things to offer them to being a business that has multiple, not loads, but a few key ways, online and offline, that you can bring new clients into your business. And then you'll have a system for onboarding them and upselling them and selling them multiple things, so that you can increase the customer value, the lifetime value of that customer. And this is how you build a business that doesn't have millions of customers that you struggle to serve, but instead you have a key collection of clients who you're able to, you know, offer a fantastic service to, and charge a brilliant premium price for it as well. So this is what we're teaching. This is what we're teaching here. Pay attention, people. So fantastic visit at Just for Dogs. This was another example of what I talked about yesterday, where because they had so much stuff that they wanted to show us and so many stories to tell, and so many dogs in, and the facility itself was like so amazing that it took a lot longer than we wanted it to. So we were probably there for like 35, 40 minutes or something like that. And Alex, then we would have to sort of down tools and then head over to the next place. So we were late by the time we got to Ashbourne, the Ark, Ashbourne, I think it was Ashbourne Ark, yeah. And anyway, we had a fantastic visit there too. Can't remember the name of the guy who's shown us around now. He's temporarily slipped my mind, but what a lovely guy, and showed us around everywhere. They had an amazing area for cats, like outdoor enrichment areas with shades for the cats so they could lie outside but be in the shade. And this was a big turn on plus point for Alex and Normsy, who also own three cats, and they were quite cat mad. So that was a that was another great visit. We got some really good information from that guy as well. It was brilliant to hear everybody speaking with the same kind of passion. Maybe it's different levels of experience, but the same kind of passion, and all telling a different kind of story, which helped us to tell our story. You know, helped us to tell a story of why are dogs in rescues, and then how can you help them, and why should you consider one? You know. So that was a brilliant thing. Then I had the long ride up to Buxton, and it was a long ride as well. It was about 20 odd miles, I think. But it felt like it was all uphill. Obviously it wasn't, it couldn't have been. But it felt like it was. Maybe my legs were just getting a little bit tired by then, because I kind of went through Ashbourne and then up through like a park and then onto this. It was a proper cycle track, actually, or a proper cycling slash walking track, like an old railway line. And I'm so glad that I did take that route and not the roads, because going on this railway line over some bridges, seeing the hills that the cars were going over and underneath me, was not a pretty sight. And I probably would have been about 8 or 9 o'clock at night by the time I got there. But anyway, bashed on with that. The being on the bike time was really interesting, because it obviously gave me a lot of time to think, you know. And because when you're riding like that, it's not like kind of going for a, you know, when you have like a little saunter, a 5 mile or 2 or 3 5 mile saunter down to the beach or somewhere, and you're just kind of taking your time with it. And so with the training, I always felt like it was, and certainly with the Tour de Rescue, it was like I couldn't in any way saunter along, you know. I had to kind of go as fast as I could manage to make sure that I got there, you know, because the schedule was so tight and stuff, as we've already said. And so that was interesting, riding up that hill. Somebody, as they always do, I was on a mountain bike, and when you're on a mountain bike, people who are on road bikes, racing bikes, or hybrids, which are a cross between a mountain bike and a road bike, their bike's a lot lighter than yours, so they can obviously go a lot faster. So really dispiriting getting overtaken by people all the time. But maybe I should have gone a bit faster, maybe I should have done a bit more training. But there was a lady, a lovely lady, who was, she'd done 30 miles down to, for like a some kind of team building day or something like that. She was a lecturer at a university, and she stopped and had a nice chat with me as we were cycling up. And then when she got a bit bored with Dominic, she decided to put her foot down, and away she went. But that kind of dragged me along, and little things like that helped pass the time a little bit too. I had my store of jelly babies, obviously, to keep me going. Alex, the video guy, and Normsy and my dad met me halfway up that track. So we had a little bit of lunch, and then they went off and camped in the pub at Buxton, where I met them eventually, probably about 5-ish by the time I got there. And this was the part of the thing. It was like such a fast turnaround, so I would have to quickly find somewhere to go and get washed and cleaned up, because obviously I looked and smelt like death by the time I turned up at the end of the day. And I had to get freshened up and changed for the start of the seminars. The seminars were all starting reasonably early, maybe 6:30, 6:45. So this was like very little turnaround time. I didn't actually have any time for tea that day. And yeah, then we did the day three seminars, which were fantastic. It was great to see people who I haven't seen speak before, to see them actually speaking. So Michelle was there, Nicola, Claire, Karen was there, although Karen didn't speak. She did create some raffle tickets. That was quite nifty, Karen. And who else we have? Rachel Bean. Yeah, Rachel Bean came along and did a talk about street dogs as well. And it was really interesting. I think, yeah, it was just great to get the five different speakers. Everyone did a quite concise talk. It would be good, I think it would be, well, I was planning on doing this anyway, some kind of speaking training for PBIC members who are keen on doing seminars. So I'll that might have to wait until the early in the new year, but that's definitely something that I'm going to be putting together, because I think it'd be really useful. I think everyone throughout all of the seminars spoke like fantastically well, but there were still like bits of room for improvement, and it, yeah, just enabled you to tell your story better, really. So, but that was really well. We had a couple of sound issues as well that night, which didn't help, but it was a fantastic evening. The crowd were like loving it. Michelle did a like an auction as well for a couple of things. We sold, you know, we got rid of all of the raffle prizes and that, which I'll help to raise a bit more money and stuff as well. Again, with more, this is, I'm putting this at my door, really, that if I had been more organized with the pre-promotion for the Tour de Rescue, we'd have probably sold more tickets for all of these places, or been able to sell the tickets at a higher price. This is just the learning process that we went on. So Claire and Karen had ordered some pizzas, which unfortunately we weren't able to hang around and eat. And yeah, so because we basically had to head to Chester for the talk that we would, for the next day, for the fourth day of the event. And this is where this is where things got a bit hairy, because we arrived at Chester at the travel lodge. There was two travel lodges on the same road. We went to one and the guy pointed us towards the other one. He said we weren't booked in there, we were booting the other one. And when we arrived at the other one, which I had just booked this earlier on in the day, bear in mind, there'd been some kind of fuck up, and the guy who I'd spoken to had actually booked us in for, what was it, like the 11th, must have been the 10th or the 11th that day. Let's say it was the 11th. He'd booked us in for the 11th of December. So we'd arrived expecting two rooms, and there wasn't any. And it basically, cut long story short, it took about fucking 45 minutes to sort out. And it was a complete and utter ball ache. And yeah, compared to the night before, where we just like breezed in, picked up our room key and went to bed. This was, I mean, it wasn't like the end of the world, but given that it was day three and we were tired and everyone still had things to do, and obviously, like I said before, basically when I get to my room, all I have to do is have a shower or whatever and then go to bed. Alex and Norms, you have to put everything on charge and stuff and dump the footage and all that kind of thing. So it was like a late night. It was like gone 12, I think, by the time we got into bed that day. And we'd obviously started again, well, me and my dad had started at about 7 o'clock in at Peak FM. So again, another really long day, another really good day too, but a really long day. Day four began, and I was kind of strangely sort of calm when day four began. We only had three rescues to visit. There was Archangels, Almost Home, and Hector's Greyhounds. And we had a nice breakfast in the hotel, and we fueled up, and then we headed straight off to see Archangels. Did the interview with the ladies in there. I have since had a message from them. Those guys came along to the evening seminar, and I've had a message from those guys to, they want to know more about how to create a newsletter, because that was one of the things that we spoke to them about. One of the things that we said they could better communicate their message and tell their story was through a newsletter, and they want some information about that. So this is, I'll talk about that in a moment, but this is it was really good. That was like a real plus point. And I've spoken to another couple of the rescues as well that we spoke to along the way about how they can better market themselves, you know. And this is kind of this is part of the legacy thing that we want to do. Then we went to Almost Home. Well, I rode to Almost Home Rescue. Really quite hilly in Wales, as you would imagine. But we managed, it was good. And yeah, I really had a bit of a second wind, or a third wind or a fourth wind on this, the last day. My legs were achy, they were tired, but I did have a bit of a spring in my step, certainly for the next leg we did after this. I felt like I was just really into it. I don't know if it was because the end was in sight or whatever, but it was good. And went to Almost Home. This was the place where you might have heard me mention Tammy and Totty, the two greyhounds who had been raced in Manchester the previous week, didn't do very good, and so the trainer had dumped them. And when these greyhound trainers, when they ring up the rescue and they'll say, there's two dogs here for you. And it's not like where they'll say, can I bring them in? They'll just say, like, there's two dogs here and you can come and get them on Tuesday. And like the rescue were basically, this is why it's so wrong in many ways. This is why it should, especially for something like that where it's a sport, it should be like illegal, you know, to get rid of them this way. But the rescues are like jumping, you know, the guys are saying, I've got these dogs here, and the rescue have got to go then. So this similar thing happened with Hector's Greyhounds. There was three people going to come to the evening seminar from Hector's Greyhounds, and Fred, who I spoke to, he said, oh, two of them can't come because they've got to go and collect a dog. And like, if they don't go and collect the dog at that time when that trainer is available to hand the dog over, the dog will be killed. It's like that, like black and white, you know. And this was like a big shock to me. Maybe it shouldn't have been, but it was. But anyway, as it happened, the few people from Hector's Greyhounds did manage to come along on the evening, which was brilliant. But yeah, Almost Home, they just had these greyhounds arrived, and they were beautiful. They were enjoying, you know, hopping around in the paddock and playing. And I really can't wait for you guys to see these stories. So please make sure that you're watching them when they come out. But they'd had a horrendous morning because they had a basset hound who had just been left 48 hours previously. She was pregnant, and then a few days previously, but they just had a 48-hour birth with this basset hound, and the pups had been to the vets, and one of them wasn't very well. And literally, the moment that Alex and Gnomesy and my dad arrived, one of the girls had said, like, hey, I have to go to the vets now, and she like ran off with this tiny little couple of hours old puppy and a pup in her hands, and went to the vet, and unfortunately this bloody thing passed away, didn't it, or it had to be put to sleep. And so they came back, and then they proceeded to do the interview with us. She wore dark glasses because she'd been crying so much, and like, I don't know, it just hits home to you what they're going through on a daily basis, you know. And just had this little thought now about my mum was a nurse. She worked night shift for a long time, most of her career she worked night shift as a nurse, and mainly looking after old people who obviously pass away, you know. A lot of them do pass away in the hospitals and stuff, and to kind of built sort of the way that my mum is, she's a bit like me, quite happy, jokey, and that kind of thing, bit of a piss take really, but her demeanor, I think, helps with that kind of environment. You do have to be a certain kind of person to work in a rescue, I think, basically, as well, because it's a similar way, you have to be a certain kind of person to be a doctor or whatever, or a dog trainer, I guess. But yeah, it was like a horrendous, horrendous story. So then did we have something to eat then, possibly? I think I met the guys for something to eat. And then we headed off to the final destination, which was, I believe, Chirk. So we drove there. We met Hector's Greyhounds at a Pets at Home type thing. I think it was Farm and Foods or something like that was the name of the place. But we met them there. We did the interview with them outside, which is fantastic. Again, it was brilliant to see these greyhounds. The big message that I took away from this was what a perfect dog a greyhound is. Yeah, you have to keep it on lead, you know, but at the same time as that, you know, give him 20 minutes or 10, 15 minutes off lead once a week, and he'll be more than happy with that. Yes, he might have to wear a muzzle, but you know what? It stops him picking up shit, and it stops people fucking stopping and talking to you in the street because they think you've got a dangerous dog. And that, for me, is another is one reason to have your dog wearing a muzzle. But they are, as Fred told me, they are 40 mile an hour couch potatoes, and they don't have a lot of health problems because they're one of the only breeds that have been bred for performance rather than looks. And yeah, I think it's there's plenty of them, you know. There's plenty of greyhounds to go around, if you like. It was an interesting thing that Almost Home said. They got a lot of greyhounds and lurchers, and they said they had to start working with rescues further afield because they have basically saturated this area with rescue greyhounds. You know, they've shipped out so many people to who've got greyhounds now in that area that they're having to go further afield to find homes for them. So again, just really interesting sort of little tidbit for you. And yeah, then it was time for a shower for Dominic, and then we had a nice bit of lunch, a bit of tea, me and my dad, and then we got set up for the evening seminar. And this dog could not make any more noise, literally, could she? Then we got set up for the evening seminar, and by then it was like a real... By then we were really... I think there was quite a sense of achievement then that we were finished, we were on the home straight. And it was a really nice feeling. And I could tell that Alex, the video guy... I didn't realise he'd had a pint then, actually, the sneaky bugger. I could tell he was sort of more his like normal self. And well, everybody was really, you know, just because it was coming towards the end. That was a brilliant evening of talks. Karen Boyce hosted from Beastly Thoughts. She did a brilliant talk about puppies. And Sarah Bartlett, author of Another Pup, did a talk about multi-dog households, how to integrate another dog, integrate a rescue dog into a multi-dog household. I finished off, Vicky Fraser started, actually. Vicky Fraser came along that day, and she did a bit about newsletters, about how rescues can and should use newsletters to tell a story, really, you know, and raise more money. And yeah, this was interesting because this was met with some resistance by some of the rescues involved. And I think, well, by one of the rescues particularly, and I think it was because they thought we were presenting the newsletter as this is going to solve all your problems. And that wasn't really what we were positioned as at all. I mean, the newsletter isn't a solve all your problems thing for anybody's business at all. But thinking about the rescues and thinking about the ones that have been successful, they're the ones who run themselves more like businesses. And this was something that I mentioned in my talk at the end of the evening when I just did a kind of bit of a general Q&A and talking about the experiences that I'd had over the last 4 days and what I'd learned about the rescue dogs and stuff. And my observation was a lot of the rescues where I went, a lot of the time some of them said something like, "Oh, it would be great if we had what the Dogs Trust have. It would be great if we had the Dogs Trust facilities, or it'd be great if we had the Dogs Trust, the amount of kennels, or it'd be great if we had that kind of thing." And yes, it would be great. But my observation to that was, well, the way that you get the resources that the Dogs Trust have got are by doing more or smarter marketing even than the Dogs Trust are doing. You know, you get what the Dogs Trust have got resources wise by acting more like the Dogs Trust. You know, yes, you can strip out the things that you don't think the Dogs Trust do very well, or you don't think the RSPCA do very well, or you don't think whoever do very well, you know, any of the big organizations. But that is how you get more. I was brutal with them. I said you can't help more dogs by loving them any more than you do, you know, because you already love them like 1,000,001%, you know. You're going to get to be able to help more people by being able to tell your story better. And yeah, so we had a bit of a chat about marketing. There was a few questions about that. There was a few questions about like what I'd learned, what dogs I would have took home with me, of which there were many. And yeah, then we finished off. Yeah, then we finished off basically, and that went down really well. We did the raffle, and then the event was done really. Vicky unfortunately had to drive home. Sarah Bartlett had to drive off home as well. These guys had obviously given up pretty much half a day to come and volunteer and speak at these events, which was amazing. I was very thankful, as I was to everybody who came along and spoke. But that left me, Karen, Alex and Normsy to have a pint. So we downed tools. Well, before we downed tools, Alex did a quick little video interview with me, just a very quick one, asking me as a bit of a round off of the event. So it'll be interesting to see that, because I can't remember what I said now. I have no idea. But yeah, then we just sat and had a pint and told some tales about the previous 4 days. And I'm sure I was beaming, but I know that Alex and Normsy were beaming. They really were beaming, and there was like a real feel good factor. You know, it felt like we'd really achieved something. The feedback that we've had since from all of the talks and stuff has been really good. We've got loads more stuff to put out there. And yeah, all in all, it was such a really worthwhile thing to do, you know. I'm so glad that I gave up the time that I did to do it. I'm so glad that I've planned it the way that I did, so that it has this long tail, you know. We've got videos to go out. We're talking about repurposing them into books. Another reason why it's, you know, I'm somebody worth hanging around, because I tend to do a lot of stuff, and I tend to do a lot of stuff with the stuff that I do. So, you know, doing anything with me will usually result in it being a bigger thing than just an event. And lots of learning points as well. You know, like I said before, we could have, what I think we could have, a big thing we could have achieved more of with a bigger team, a bigger support team, would have been, ironically, would have enabled us to tell the story of what we were doing at that time better. So I intended to do a lot more live Facebook lives and videos that I could upload whilst I was in the rescues or in between the rescues and that kind of thing. But we just did not have time to do it, you know. We barely had enough time to do the actual stuff for the documentary type things that we're putting together, but we certainly didn't have any other time to do anything else. Or if we did have time, we couldn't be bothered, you know, just because it was, we didn't have time really. It was too busy. But that was a failing, you know. We'd have done a lot better to tell. It would have been better if we could have told the story of the rescues while we were in there, just to create more of a buzz about the event on social, you know, because obviously it's a very, you'll have seen by the shares that the videos are getting that we're putting out now, it's got like a viral element about it. And I think if we put more stuff out faster, then it would have, yeah, it just would have got more traction and more exposure for the rescues really. And that's kind of apart from the logistical stuff, which again, that was my failings, my attention to details, that the logistical stuff and the telling the stories on the day, they're the two things that I think we could have done better. We definitely could have done better, which would have resulted in more exposure for the rescues really, and then consequently more exposure for us. But the rescues are what it was all about. So, and having a bigger support team to do that for us. So whether we could have, just thinking out loud now really, but whether I could have maybe more heavily involved the people who I was meeting at those venues. So whether I could have met some of the speakers who were speaking on the evening, whether I could have met one each of those at the rescues as well, so that they could have at least come along and told the story of that particular rescue in a live environment, you know, in a live video on their phone type of thing. And it just, I think, yeah. So anyway, that's kind of the minor thing. It has left me with a warm, fuzzy feeling. It has left me wondering left me thinking that it will be a good thing to do next year. Although again, I need to plan it in a way that makes it better, you know, better and more effective for the rescues. And Yeah, but we've still got lots more stuff coming out about it. The video's coming out. We've got some books in the pipeline. People are still contributing blogs to the Tour de Rescue website, and you're more than welcome to do that as well, if you wish, as long as the blog is up to scratch. And yeah, we've got some books in the offing. We've got some webinars. I'm probably going to do some webinars earlier in the year. Yeah, just to quickly talk about the sort of legacy element of it. So way before the Tour de Rescue was even a thing, it was my intention to do more stuff to help rescues. And I had numerous conversations with Vicky Fraser. We had a number of projects that we kind of started and thinking about to help rescue centres, because she's passionate about, well, animal rescue in general, really. Yeah, so going forward, there'll be more stuff specifically to help the rescues to better market themselves, if you like. But that will be, that's obviously not going to be something that I'm particularly wanting to make any money out of at all. It's just going to be something that I want to do because, yeah, I know they can tell their story a lot better, and we need to, part of how we change the whole system of the amount of dogs that are going in rescues and keeping dogs out of rescue and keeping them with their families is about the type of stuff that I talk about all the time, simplifying the dog training, making it easier for people, and then the rescues marketing themselves and marketing the dogs that they've got as being these special dogs that they are, that we all know that we are, anybody who's had a rescue or walked one or trained one or whatever. Yeah, so I think that quite nicely wraps up the rest of the Tour de Rescue. I'm sure there'll be some other stuff as well that will come out. If you guys have any questions or comments about it, or comments about these audios and the event itself, please fire them up in the group. But otherwise, for now, from me, I shall say adios, and I'll see you all next month.